Good morning, Australia. Good afternoon, America. And hello, Russia and Germany. Welcome back to cool that we get to say hello, Russia and Germany. I've set myself a little goal that I'm gonna learn how to say hello in German and Russian specifically for that reason. Anyway, I digress. Welcome back to Radio Tony. This is a conversation with Kez, my glorious co-host, and we're back live doing our author show. Just a reminder for those of you that are listening live on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, we have the gorgeous Paolo in the Philippines ready and waiting to send you information and links related to the show today. Alternatively, you can jump onto radiotony.com where you'll find all the information about Kez, her book, her link, and how you can work with her, which is what we'll be talking a little bit about today. Also, a reminder, if you miss the live shows and you want to catch up, they're available all across the planet as a replay live show on Binge TV networks. They're also available on the Tony TV channel app on LG, Samsung, and Roku smart TVs across the planet. And we encourage you to interact with us, send us comments. Questions. We love to talk to people across the planet, particularly authors, about your writing experience. Now, my co-host is the amazing Kez Wickham St. George, who, in her own right, is an international best-selling author. She's also the driver of her own creativity, and her passion is to inspire and nurture others to tell their story. Her values are simple. When you touch a heart, you can change a life. And by encouraging you to write or journal, her belief is that you add value to your life. And today I wanted to remind you that you can grab any of Kez's amazing books from her website or on Amazon. Just Google Kez Wickham St. George and you'll find her books. And she's got another one on the way very shortly. And she has a short film coming up, all of which we're going to talk about today. Good morning, Kez. How are you?
I'm fabulous, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad that I can sit down and have a nice, leisurely chat with my friend Kez live on the air and have a moment with. Have a moment away from the emails and the messages that have been popping in this morning. It's a busy midweek for me. Kez, first of all, I thought I'd start, and I'm digressing from our agreed talking points, but I wanted the audience to know about your film. Can you tell us what's happening? Because it's very exciting, and I want the audience just to know how their writing can diversify to begin with.
Right.
So tell us about the film, Kez.
Okay, the movie. It's a short movie. The producer is Sally Newman. Can you hear me all right? Can
Yeah,
you hear me all
absolutely.
right? Okay.
Yes, that's good.
So the producer is Sally Newman, who is very, very well known and won lots of bits and pieces. I can't tell you how many logos and medals she's won because I don't know, but I know she's won some. So we had a chat, and I showed her the prologue to my next book. Now, this prologue, when you know something's right, you know it's right, and it sits in your chest,
Yes.
and you think, I've got to do something about this. It's taken me 2 years to approach Sally. Now, she is actually a neighbor. She lives 10 minutes from me in a place called Rockingham. And I
Yes.
often see her at the different networking things we go to. I say, hi, Sally. She says, hi, kids. How you going? We do the normal la, la, la stuff. And I've always thought, one day I'm going to ring you and approach you about the prologue. Well, I did. And all it is to anyone listening, all you have to do is ask the question. And I've learned that over the years. You just have to ask the question. And it's either yes or no. And then you walk away with the answer. And so she said, yes, can we meet up for a cup of tea and show me the prologue? So I printed it all out and I showed it to her, and we're in a coffee bar, and she said, I think I can work with this. I'll get back to you. And I thought, okay, you'll get back to me. And then, the doubts set in, like every author, like every artist, the doubts set in. Am I doing the right thing? Will this happen? Oh my God, what's it going to cost me? Is it going to be, you know, I've offered to make a movie with this woman. I'm not a trillionaire. And the thoughts go on and on and on, and you become self-doubting and self-destructing. And so I have a wonderful husband who says, don't be stupid. You know that you've done well. So, and that's him complimenting me, as all men, they aren't. Most men aren't forthcoming with compliments. So I left it with her, and then I got a phone call saying, let's do it. Let's meet up. Let's get the prologue, because she's a scriptwriter as well. And when you hand a scriptwriter something, they say, we're going to have to change it. So I gave her, I just said, you go for it. You change it to what you want. So it fits into the movie, but I don't want the characters changed. And it's got to be in Rockingham. And I just wanted it to be, to come from home, come from the heart. So what she's done is she has hired actors from Perth, not me. She's hired actors from Perth.
Yes.
And casting starts on Sunday. I'm so excited about that because, you know, I know my characters. I know them. I know who they are. Now, the male character was written around my beautiful grandson because he's a boy. He's a real bloke. And the girl will be interesting because she was in the actual prologue. She's very high class, very well to do, very well educated, and she's English, whereas the guy is Irish Aussie. So, bit of a rough tumbler. So I have been, and this is the thing about it. Once you hand over your prologue and you say, thank you, producers will say, see you later. But Sally's not like that. Yes. She's invited me to the casting. But anything else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm invited because I was pretty strict about that. I know who I want. But anything else, you have to be invited to. Yes. And so I have been invited to one of the filming situations. She said to me, and there was instructions of you stand to the side, you don't speak, you don't say, oh, no, not like that, like this. She's very much in charge. You know, you don't.
Yeah.
It's not what you think it is. It's a totally different scenario. And you have to be very brave to hand that prologue over. And say,
oh gosh, Kez, absolutely. How scary was that? Like, so here's the thing. Actually approaching someone with something that is part of your heart and soul, particularly as a creative writer, that's your passion right there on those pages. And to hand it off to someone and to trust them to do it justice. Wow.
Yeah. It was well. You know, when you hand it off, you hand your manuscript to an editor, you know it will come back with corrections and they say, look, we've taken that out and put there in and different things like that. And I even find that hard. Yeah. Even now, I've been writing for 20 years and I've had three beautiful editors work with me. And each and every one of them said, geez, you're tough, because I'm going, no, we can't do that. We've got to do this. And they have to explain it to me, the better way of putting things on so the reader can understand it. Because I'm basically a writer. That's all I am, a writer. And the journey that Rhoda has taken me down is absolutely amazing. I'm now a Radio Tony co-host. I talk on local radio. I'm going on the Perth radio, national radio. I'm on a TV program, and all these invitations have been coming in because I started the journey of writing with a movie. You know, I'm gobsmacked. I'm still pinching myself about the movie. It's like, is this really what happens? And it doesn't happen to all writers. It's where I wanted it to go.
Absolutely.
My publisher, my actual publisher, she's a dream publisher. She said to me when we first met, so what's your end goal? And I thought, for a writer, there's no end goal. But for this particular book, which is the end of a trilogy, I wanted a movie. That was 3 years ago. And then it's been sitting in my chest. I want a movie. I want a movie. Until I knew if I didn't say to somebody, I want a movie, I'd bust. So that's when I approached Sally. But, you know, as a writer, you become clever. You learn to diversify in your writing. I can write, I haven't done a bio yet, but I can, well, I sort of, I've done a part bio, and that's on Amazon. You've got to be very brave, and your mind starts to work and weave in different ways. And that's why I encourage people to journal, because your mind will be, you've got your everyday job, you've got your everyday duties, whatever it may be, but then you've got your creative mind in the background talking away to you, and it's very distracting.
Constantly.
Yeah. Well, you're a creative, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. You've written a book, you know exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Yes. So I encourage people, like 2 o'clock this morning, I woke up with a big, oh my goodness, I've got to put this into the, I've got to put this into the book, because it was with the next book, I've got two endings, two different endings to the next book.
Yes, I was just going to say that brings our conversation to the next book, which you've been madly editing right now as we speak. Kez is editing, in editing for her next book. So, yeah, go on, Kez. Yeah.
So I decided it's the last book of the trilogy. Do I want to finish it there? Does the lead character want to die? That's the question I had to ask myself, because the lead character's been with me in three books now. She's very much part of me. And that's the other thing about write. When you write, your lead character becomes you. And you find that your life experiences actually start going into the book. Like, you know, just the simple thing, like I burnt myself frying chips. Well, I actually did that 6 months ago. And you can actually put the your emotion into the book of how that felt, the stupid act of burning yourself when you're frying food. You know, if it happens to you, it gets into the book. And that's what I find so interesting about writing. Your life experiences, they actually become the main character. So you do get very close to them. So my question was to myself, do I want Tara to die? And
big question.
I don't. But I left it up to my audience. So there's two different endings in the book. One, she dies, and one, she steps into the world of shades. But she's still a working girl. so it's
how's that going to work? Like, it's a wonderfully creative way to write a book with two endings, and I'm guessing the readers will get to pick which ending, or you're going to surprise them.
No, I want the readers to pick which ending they want. So if she travels, and because the next book's called Scribe. So at the end of it, she is asked to die. She's requested to die. And she has a choice.
So the movie is the prologue of this current book?
Yes. And in the movie, it's totally different. The movie starts off on a beach scene. It's a horrible beach scene, and I don't know why. I'm such a pleasant person, so why I like writing horror and nasty stuff, I don't know. My husband and my friends say to me, well, look, where's the brain going? But I do love writing ghost stories. I love it. So it's semi-paranormal. The book, the book will take you to places you don't normally go to. It will ask you questions. It's confrontational.
But all good books ask questions of us that we may not be so comfortable with. That's the part and parcel of the creative process, and why people read books, to take them out of their normal everyday lives and give them something else to read about. So, amazing. So with the movie, their casting is on Sunday, and so once the actors are cast, then how long does the filming, do you know how long it's going to take and the rest of it?
Filming is very, very different these days, and I've had to sit there and really, really listen to what Sally was saying. I have a friend. The way I learned about making a movie was about 15 years ago. One of my best friends owned a picture theatre, and she told me how they did it then. And it was called It's in the Can. So there was this like the cellophane strip of movie, and it was in the can, and you went off to different theatres, and they, you know, the old way of putting it, having the reel go around and all that business. And well, now it's done by thumb drive. And I just felt, I went, oh no, there's no drama to that. There's no, you know, do you remember sitting in the movie? Do you remember sitting in the movies, Tony, when you're a kid and the movie breaks and you hear click, 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 and the screen goes blank? I had all that scenario going on in my mind. I thought,
In
oh,
your
this is
head.
good. Yeah. Click, 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 the screen goes blank. And
Not
then
like
I
that at
only get,
all, is
no, it's all done.
it?
It's all just about green screened, the whole lot.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
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 So there will
Which is
be some,
incredible. And
I know. But it's nothing like, you know,
then.
trudging through sleet and snow to climb the mountain. There's nothing like that anymore. It's
Yeah.
all green screened and they're all crawling on the ground and the scene's set behind them. And I
Yes.
think, no, I want the
Yes.
real thing happening, but this is the way the movie goes.
You can't tell the difference though. Like you that's the glory of the creative film people. You don't know that they're not actually climbing a snowy mountain because it looks absolutely real, doesn't it?
Well, the technicians make this look real. And she showed
Yes,
me a little,
yes.
Sally showed me a little sketch she did of a girl climbing a rock. But it wasn't a girl, it was a girl sitting on a ledge with her back. And she was doing this, she was like making actions of climbing a rock, but she wasn't climbing a rock. She was sitting on the sand pretending. And it showed you, and the actual scene, she was way up the top of a cliff. You know, so
That's very cool.
I know. So my old-fashioned ideas of sitting in a movie theater and it in the tin can and the producer saying it's in the can, folks. But I do know that it will go around Australia. And thank you, Tony, for being
That
one
was
of
my
the
next
investors.
question.
Yeah, it's going around Australia. It's very exciting. Yeah, and I guess from there it goes over. I'm sure she said if she wins something here, it will then end up in Cairns in France at the short movie festivals over there. And that's where I want it to go. I want to showcase
Absolutely.
Australia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, does it go into cinemas as a short film, or is it a like a prelude to the bigger films? Like, how does it work? Do you know, Kez?
I think from what I've been told, there's short film festivals all around the world, and that's where it'll be displayed there. So you can imagine going to a short film festival and you'll be have paid to watch maybe 15 short films in maybe 2 hours, just like going to the normal movies, but watching short movies. That's all it is. So my one is 20 minutes. And the prologue, I have seen it since it's been changed, and it's like, what happened? It's shrunk. But there's a lot of Rockingham scenery in it. And I'm
Oh, that's
so
good.
excited. So excited. Well, it's a beach scene. It is definitely a beach scene. And it's called The Song of Morrow.
Yes,
So we
I
couldn't get
love.
tomorrow
I was
out.
going to say, let's tell the audience what the title is because I love it so much. The Song of Morrow is just a lovely play on words and a creative way to use those words to get them interest. So it. How long is the process in production? Like, are we looking at September release, or what's your thoughts
Next
on
year,
that, Kez?
2022, next year.
2022.
It'll be a January, February release. So, I was trying to get it for, I did ask for September this year because there's a writer's retreat on here.
Yes,
And
we're
my
going to
publisher
a
would have
writer's
been,
retreat.
yeah, so my publisher suggested that, but it's just not viable. Yeah. All these things have to go through a process.
I was just going to say that's quite a lengthy process that it has to pass through before it actually gets to that release point. So that's a wonderful outcome for an author to have their work go to the screen. That's an amazing accomplishment, Kez. I want to talk a little bit more about your writing process. When you started writing this trilogy, obviously you wanted it to be a trilogy, or was there a time when it was just going to be a single book?
The first one I wrote was just a single book. And then I realized I was having so much fun with my lead character because you got to face it. You know, your lead character can do things that actually you can't do. So I can't leap mountains, but she can. So I was taking the places she's been and the stories that's been told are very true.
Yes.
But her experiences through life are not me. I had a question from my editor the other day, and my editor's marvelous to work with, and she said, in the real world, I have long silver hair, but in the book, I have short spiky hair, just like yours, short spiky hair, because that must be so much easier to travel with. Yeah, but she said to me, "This doesn't sound like you," and I said, "Well, that's me. That's the character." So you can get too confused. You can, you're actually. Yes. You're talking to me, you can see my face, but then you read the lead character and you think that's not Kez. Well, no, it's not me. The experiences are, but I'm not the lead character. And you have to learn to divorce yourself because she can take over. She's very bossy. She can actually take over. So no, Tara, you stay in your corner and I'll write the book. Thank you very much. And it's with every writer, every writer that I have found that I've mentored along the way, they have that's why I say journal. They have the lead character and the other characters popping up into their minds all the time, you know, changing nappies, cooking dinner, whatever you're doing, you are semi-conscious as creating that book.
So obviously the trilogy's been, obviously the trilogy's been a while in the making. How good is it to be at the end of the trilogy? Are you already thinking about the next project, or are you so immersed in the final stages of this project that you're not even thinking about what's next?
I've written the first ending, and to be honest, I cried. I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I had to say goodbye to Tara. So that's why I thought, no, I can't do this to her.
Yes.
Because she's very, she is a senior. She's very unusual in her outlook. She's very stroppy. She's everything. She's everything I would wish I could be, but I'm too soft-hearted. Yes. So it was to say goodbye to her. I thought, no, what we'll do is we'll give her two endings and it's the reader's. I mean, oh, my God, Tony, if they choose that I knock her off at the end and we have nothing more to do with Tara, I'm going to cry for a week, I think.
Oh, no. Because like we said before, you're invested in these characters and how they play out in the books. I want to sort of touch back on the actual process of writing. And I know from talking to you, Kez, that there's a whole lot of planning and drafting and revising and editing. There's a whole process that goes behind writing. And I know that it can be the same for lots of writers, but they have their individual nuances about what they do. For some writers, there's a huge body of work around research and making sure that they are historically truthful in the portrayal of their characters. I just wanted to quickly talk about your research around Tara, the central character in the book, and what that looks like for you.
But in this recent book, you know, in any book I've written about Tara, she's a traveller. That's the thing. She's a grey nomad. Grey nomads in Australia mean you grab whatever you can to travel, tent, caravan, motorhome. She's into all of that.
Yes.
So the thing I had to research was not the experiences that I have been told, because I've, you know, certainly traveled in all those vehicles. So I had to make sure, and this is where a good editor comes into it also, is that I didn't take everybody zigzagging all over the place and it didn't make any sense. We had to follow a route. We had to follow the actual roadmap. So when I've got a roadmap in front of me that says it goes to Christchurch, to Kaikoura, to Ashburton, well, it doesn't go that way. You have to follow the road route so that, and I found this out recently, that people actually follow you. So if I've been to Christchurch, there's Christchurch, then, she went to Greymouth, but that's not on the route.
Mm-hmm.
So where is she going with this one? So if you follow the road, you know, the road map, if you've got a map and the experience, you can take the experience with you. If you were told something happened in Greymouth, for instance, or in Rockingham, you can actually take that experience and pop it into another place, but you have to be correct about the vehicle you took, about was it a bus, train, tram, car. You have to be very correct about that. Now, a lot of riders will think, and I have found this in some of the ones I've mentored, they will take you, say, from Australia to New Zealand to Fiji within 5 minutes. That's not the correct way to do it. Time, you have to follow the time limits. So the reader isn't being thrown all over the place. The reader can actually quite comfortably sit in their armchair and think, yes, I've been there. I've seen that, you know. There's a place in Christchurch that has a big silver chalice. It's a massive sculpture. And I talk about that a bit in my book because it does represent Christchurch. But I had to have the correct name, the correct architect, the correct time it was built, why it was built, and that all had to be put in the story. You have to be, when you're writing something factual, you make sure it's absolutely correct. Otherwise, it's creative writing.
Yeah, because I know when you're writing that part of your process is around like the first draft, and so I know that you seek input after you've written that first draft. How does that process work for you, and how hard is it to allow your work to be read by other people and be under critique, so to speak?
I cringe. I just cringe. I think, oh no. I know what this person's going to say. I actually keep saying, I have three or four readers. I would never send the first draft, Tony. That's for me only.
Yeah.
And I actually get them, I'll go down to my printer, I will get it printed and bound, and I will go through it line by line. And that's dreadful. I can't put that out. That's dreadful. So it's time for you to work on it. So you've done your first draft and then it's time for you to work on it. Now, I'm the old fashioned type. I like to have something in front of me that I can slash with a big red pen and think that's rubbish, that goes out. But lots of people now work on their computer. So do the same thing. Keep your first draft to yourself. That's your personal, that's your personal. Mm-hmm. Then second draft, maybe if you think it's good enough to send out. Third draft, I would definitely approach a reader. Now, it's when the third draft comes back to me, I think, oh, no. Because everyone is opinionated. Everybody's got an opinion. If you send that out, then you've got to honour their opinion.
How difficult is that?
Well, it's for you to work on. You don't have to do anything. It's for you to work
on. That's right. I was going to say, So you don't.
They're not sending that out to destroy you. They're sending it out as a critique, you know. So, but they have their opinion, and they may say it. They may make all sorts of suggestions. And I'm thinking, and this is where I cringe. I think, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I see it like that? You know. So, writing a bestseller. You've got to make sure that everything is ticked off, every single thing. when my publisher saw my first book that I approached, she went, "That's a very big book." And I went, "I know, I like big books." I didn't even think about what it was going to do. But like, she'd have to get, I got an editor in, and then there was a proofreader, then there was a second proofreader, and then it was into the print. And it was like, where's all this gone? You know, this was a fun project, and now it's all really hard work. But if you want to see it at the top of the ladder, that's what you've got to do.
You do have to do the hard work. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right.
And you have to, I guess you've developed strategies around how you deal with people's critique of your writing. What are some of those things that are important, Kes?
The thing, and a critique?
Yes. Is it looking at it objectively and going, okay, so they've said blah, blah. Does that mean I have to completely change the structure and the way that part of the book flows? Or does it mean that I just need to shift things around? Like, how do you deal with that critique? Well, I'm sure that it's quite difficult at times.
It cuts, especially when they're abrupt and rude about it. But that's where you learn to actually grow up and think, I've asked this person to read it and critique it, and they've sent it back to me with exactly what they've asked them to do. So you have to put on your big girl panties and think to yourself, what can I do? But can I improve this? Instead of looking upon it as they don't like my story, think about how can I improve this? So when someone goes to buy it, it fits all readers' shoes. That's the way I look upon a book. My books have to fit all my readers' shoes. It's no good sitting down and thinking that was a horrible book. I would hate that to happen. So you have to take in the critique, and you have to work with it. And if it's just pure critique, you know, there's nothing suggestively helpful about it, then you thank them.
Yeah.
You might be able, and I keep all my critiques. I've got a huge folder of critiques from way back when, 15 years ago. And they're getting better and better and better as I write. You know, it took me a while to find, because, you know, when you first write a book, you're looking for the good, oh, well, they're nice about my book, I'll stay with them, and they're nice about my book. Yeah. But it's the harsh stuff that you really
But you want to drive yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to drive yourself further and better, and to do that, you need constructive criticism or
and that's what you need to look
feedback
at.
That helps you develop as an author. So you've been doing this for such a long time at such a high level, because that I guess that you've worked out within yourself how to deal with that critique. But for new authors, it can be quite confronting, can't it?
Yes, yeah, it can be. It can be especially when it's harsh, because people don't take that into consideration. They don't take the person that asked me to read their story has a heart. So they don't take that. You know, they just get out this big red pen. They go slash 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 slash, and you think, "There's half of my story gone." Yeah,
yes.
And you would know that feeling.
Yeah,
you would know that being
absolutely.
An author yourself.
Absolutely.
So it's
absolutely.
It really is taking it by the horns and learning they're not doing this to hurt me. They're doing this to make it a better book.
No. Yeah, that's right. And that's a good way to think about it. I that's the way I remember thinking about it, going, they're doing this so that I have a better book. And as hard as it was, you just got to go, no, I want the better book. I don't want to scrimp on quality.
That's right.
As we said at the beginning of the show, you're deep in that editing portion of the process. Can you tell the audience what editing's like? From my perspective, editing was painful, almost as painful as layout and trying to choose the right book cover for the book.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts about editing, Kes?
Well, first of all, with what you said, you self-published, didn't you? No, that's not for me. I've watched the struggle. I've watched the struggle. When I mentor a person, I say, I offer them a publisher's package, and they say, I'll self-publish. I think, go with it. And get back to me when you're crying in the corner and thinking, I can't do it. Because it's really hard work. I look, anyone that self-publishes, I admire. So editing. Yes. Editing to me is making your book shine. So you can meet editors that, to be nice, they're very picky. So when you find an editor that picks the fine threads, don't think to yourself, oh, they're just being picky about it. They're not. They're actually looking between the lines. They're expensive. Yes, they're very expensive.
Yes.
But they are worth their weight in gold. Now, when I mentor someone.
A crucial part.
Oh, yeah. It is crucial. If you're going to self-publish, I received a book the other day that was self-published and non-edited. And I read the first chapter, the first paragraph, and put it down. I thought, this is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Because I do review books. So why would you send someone a book of, she obviously put a heart into it. And I felt really sorry for her that she put a heart into it, but not edited, not good. You need all writers, no matter how good you go.
Just going to say, for the key bit of information, if you're writing a book, all well and good, but you must set aside time and money for good editing. And part of that is finding the right editor for you, because there's all sorts of different editors. There's structural editors, there's flow editors, there's content editors, there's all sorts of editors. So you have to do some research around editing. I know when I went to edit my book, I actually wanted an editor who had some sort of psychological background. So my editor was actually a psychologist editor, because there were components of my book that talked deeply about the psychology of some of the things that I went through. So that was important to me, but that might not be important to others. So how did you choose your editors, and have you chosen different editors for different books?
Okay. So for the paranormal, the trilogy of paranormal books, the first lot I wrote, my publisher chose the editor for me, and I was very happy with that. And her name was Jillian, I forget, but that was many years ago. When I started writing Tara, the lead character in this book, and the last trilogy, I have had two editors. One of them I wanted because she was well-traveled.
Yes.
And she knew what it was. I mean, she knew what it was to get in the caravan and go without any, she knew all the places I'd been to. So she was the one that taught me, follow the roadmap. Don't take people like, I'm great. I had a great experience there and there and there. Because people are zigzagging with you and they're getting confused about where you are. She was the one that taught me stay on the roadmap. And she was also the one that taught me, when you're writing, have a roadmap, have a mind map of where what the story's about. So so you've got in front of me, as I'm on the wall in front of me, I actually have a mind map. So what the story's all about, where it's going to go. It's full of balloons. Yeah, it's full of balloons. What's Tara doing today? Where is she? Who has she talked to? Did she have an experience? Did she have an adventure? In this recent book I wrote about being snowbound, and I've actually had that experience. I was blocked in a house, and the door, I couldn't get out the door or the windows. And all the neighbors were in the same situation.
No.
Was the snow. It was in the South Island in a place called Otamatata. So I wrote about that. Now, my editor for this book, she said
name
to me,
for a place.
Otamatata.
Name for a place.
Well, it's a Maori name, I guess. So anyway.
Yeah, that's great.
It is. So I said to my editor, said, did this really happen? It sounded so realistic. And I said, it did happen. But it may not have happened in the way it meant. I wrote about it like it was nearly a death sentence for this woman. But really it wasn't. It really wasn't. Yeah. I mean, all I had to wait for was the snowplow And he dug me out. He dug the door out and off we went. But, you know, it's these things that happen to you. So the editor picked up on the fact that was it real, was it not? She's also picked up on the fact that, again, the roadmap, I had gone to a place which actually wasn't on, there's no bus that can get there, only cars. It's a really bad road in the South Island. She's actually, and I was lucky enough for her to find that she'd actually been there. And she said, this isn't the bus route. Yeah. And I have to say, you're right, not a bus route or a train route or a track or nothing. You can get there by car, but you will get stuck. All these things, and a really good editor, as you said, they have different genres. Pick the one.
Yeah.
I sent my book, my first book out to four different editors and one got back to me. Three got back to me saying, you need to rewrite. Two got back to me saying, is this the first draft? And one said, yeah, I'll do it. I'd love to. So I was very lucky.
Yeah.
And I've had my publisher now, she has editors, you know, knocking on a door saying, can we work with you? So I don't have a problem because she knows my genre. And so she'll say, work with this editor, they'll do well. So my actual editor at the moment is lives in Melbourne. So we talk and I'll often send her a message, thank you. That was a bit hard to swallow, but thank you, because she's written something that's quite critiqued. And I'll think, ouch, I've got to rewrite that piece.
It is.
But this is
ouchy, you know, process, isn't it, Kez?
It is.
It's an ouchy.
You've got to learn to enjoy it. This is your this is your growing.
Embrace it.
Yeah, this is you growing up as a writer. Yeah. You can't get away with, as I said, I got this book, which I can't do anything with. I sent it back to her. She lives in Los Angeles. I sent it back to her because there's nothing I can do with it. But she hasn't embraced the fact that people are going to critique you. People are going to say that's wrong. You can't use language like that. That's wrong. And the editors that you work with will pick this up. And you grow. Yeah. Otherwise, there's no point in being a writer. If you can't grow, your craft doesn't grow with you, then you can't you can't write.
Yeah.
Well, you can, but it won't be picked up.
Yeah. That's the other thing as a writer too, Kez, that if you follow the process and you have good editors and publishers and the book gets to publication stage and you get some bad reviews, that's actually part and parcel of an author's journey. If you don't have bad reviews, then I remember listening to, I think it was Elizabeth Gilbert, and her commentary on the first bad review that she got. And, I mean, she sent her book to hundreds and hundreds of publishers before someone published Eat, Pray, Love. And we all know how good that was. But there were some bad reviews, and she talked about how you have to accept that not everyone is going to love the way you write, and that's okay. There will be a larger portion of people that love what you write, and as evidenced by both your writing and Elizabeth Gilbert's, there's obviously great writing and great stories. But there will still be people who don't like what you write, and that's okay. You've just got to take a deep breath and go, c'est la vie. What will be, will be.
It's all part of the writing journey. Anyone can write. Everyone has a story. But if you want to sit in your office with the curtains closed and think, I'm a writer, that's fine. That's what you do. But I wanted people to read my story, so therefore I had to take a step out into the sunlight like every other author, because you can be a writer, and once you're published, you become an author. But there's many different ways of being an author. You can go into magazines. One of my last ladies that I mentored, she's now writing for magazines. She writes this amazing story, short stories. I'm encouraging her to write a short story book. She's marvelous at what she does, but stepping into the spotlight, she's taken 3 years. 3 years of me saying, you can do this, you can do this. You know, what's your problem? You have to learn that if you're going to write and you want people to read your work, got to take that big step, big breath, because people aren't always pleasant.
No. The other thing about a lot of writers is that by virtue of what they do, they like writing in quiet, alone spaces. But if you want bigger things for your writing, then you have to step out into scary places and step out and do scary things. And I can tell you from my own experience that that's going to be scary. But it's only scary for a certain amount of time. Then you get used to it and you're like, okay, big breath. This is what I do. I really do enjoy this, but it's the first step is really hard. The first step of publicly putting your work out there is really hard. So don't underestimate the stories that your mind will come up with to prevent you from actually doing this thing that you really love. But you've got to either talk to someone or work with someone. And I guess that's where book coaches come in to their own, Kez. Yep. And whilst you're an international best-selling author, part of what you do is to coach others in their book writing process. And you love that equally as much as writing because you have the experience behind you to help coach people in that process. And believe me, you need someone to be coaching because someone needs to be there when you go through that editing process because it's going to be tough. You have to know that it's going to be tough. I don't think anyone or any of the authors I've ever spoken to enjoy that editing process. They learn to enjoy it and they learn to anticipate and appreciate it. But the first time, that's going to be tough. And that's where you want someone like Kez on your side going, okay, it's all right. This is what we expected. This is how you deal with it. And this is how we make it work for you. That's why you would have a book coach to help you on that process because it is tough. It's hard on humans to subject themselves to the critique and review of others. But that's why you want to do what you want to do because you want lots of people to read the stuff that you produce. And Kez is a perfect example of this. You just keep honing your skills.
That's right.
The other thing I wanted to mention today is once you get your published book, the next thing is about getting those recommendations and reviews. And that's another part of what Kez likes to do. Kez, tell the audience about your little author reviews and book reviews that you do. And that applies to anyone that comes on our author show. Kez offers this service as well. And it's very, very important for authors. Kez?
What I do is I get them, I do hard copies. I find it very hard to present an ebook. It doesn't work. So I like a hard copy and I do like to, I will give it a speed read. It takes me a week to get through it and I will pick out the highlights and then I present it on a live on Facebook. I will then, if they want me to, I will write them a review. The other good thing that I can talk to you about it on Radio Tony, and there's a local radio station that have often said to me, if you want to do a book review, we're happy to receive it. So there's all that way of, you know, every author that wants to make sales needs to actually get out there as much as possible. You know, you're not the only one writing.
Recommendations
you're not the only one.
Are key.
Right. You're not the only one with a book. Yeah. But when you have people behind you saying, this is a really good book. I mean, yesterday I did one for an author in Melbourne and she was just delighted because, you know, when I review a book, I try and keep it as pleasant as possible, but there are some books that you have to say, look, this is going to be harsh. And the one I did yesterday, it's a beautiful book, but it's in your face. We do have mental health problems.
Yes.
We've got to face them. So I just think that I'm here for the authors and the writers. And the best thing about what I do is watching them smile when they see they've been successful. That's absolutely amazing. Last year I had five authors and this year I've had two authors, all been published. Mm-hmm. So, and it doesn't matter where you're published. If you want to try things out, go for a magazine.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so simple.
Writing is writing. It doesn't matter doesn't matter where you start, and if you want to start small, that's completely okay, isn't it?
Yep, it is. It's completely okay. People write reviews about books for the newspaper, and that's them writing. That's their opinion, yes. And they feel that they've put their 10 cents worth in. That's the way they write. I've actually been sent a column of reviews by one person that wanted to write for the newspaper. He said, "What do you think of the writing?" And I went, "It's great, go for it." But I'm not the newspaper. You know, I don't have to accept that. I just thought what he did was very, very good. And that's another way of writing. You know, it's putting your point across, and that's what a book is. It's all a book is putting your creative point across, whether it be a bio or fiction or whatever it is. You know, you can buy, you know, every book you buy in a school, every book it's the author's point of view. That's the way we've got to look upon it.
And not to underestimate for the listening audience the importance of writing reviews about the books that you read. So reviews and recommendations are like gold for writers and authors. They need them, particularly on the big sites like Goodreads and Amazon.
Yes.
Your reputation rides on the reviews of others. And, yes, you'll get the occasional bad review, but it will be, generally speaking, there'll be more good than there will be bad because, again, people writing reviews are putting their words there. So they have to stand behind what they've written. And a lot of people will do that with consideration. There's not... I remember talking to a young novice author, and that their concern was that the reviews would be bad. And I actually said back to her, "Well, actually, it takes a lot of confidence for many people to write a review, particularly if it's a bad one. There's not, despite what we might think, there's not a lot of people." Dedicated to bringing you down and writing something bad. Most people will try and find the good in what you do and what you write. So you have to take that response, understand that there may be bad reviews, but predominantly people are good and kind-hearted and helpful and want to write good things about you and your writing.
That's right. I can't deny that. I've had nothing but good reviews. Yeah. I've had a couple of bad ones. Every writer does. And I'd be silly to say, "Oh no, my life just swanned along," because it hasn't. I've had some bad reviews. I've had some people actually stop me and say I didn't enjoy the book.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's not much I can do about that. So you've got to have a sense of humor as well. You know, you do have to have this cloak that you put on when you are looking at people's work and you're being edited and be able to take it off and leave it on a room somewhere. You know, it's like a Superman, a Superman power. You know, you have to be able, you just have to, and it's growing up. It's growing up and realizing that everybody, it's the same in life. Not everybody's going to like you. But there are thousands of people.
And people that will like you and will love your work. So hang on to the positive in the situation.
That's right.
Because that is the end of the show for this week. We will be back next week with an author that we're going to interview by the name of Brittany Eldridge. And the reason I picked her for next week's show is that she talks about some dysfunctional family life in her memoir. And she's also written a few more books other than that. But for Kez and I, talking about dysfunctional family life is kind of something that we're both familiar with and happy to talk about. So, Kez, I was just going to say, let's talk about our normal family dysfunction and make it more normal across the world. Thank you so much for co-hosting the show. I love our time together.
It's a privilege
for me to share the airwaves with Kez, a real privilege. I look forward to coming together with you again next week, audience, and we'll be talking with our author and talking about her writing journey. And thank you very much for listening today. Don't forget to jump onto Kez's website, Kez Wickham St. George. And if you're driving and listening to the show, you can also jump on to radiotony.com and look under my co-host section. You'll find all the direct links to Kez and her books and her coaching. She is an amazing book coach because she is such a fantastic writer. And I encourage you, if you're thinking about the concept or idea for a book and you want some help, connect with Kez. She's your girl. All right, my wonderful audience, that's our lot for this week. Thank you, Kez. We will be back next week with another conversation with Kez. Bye for now, everyone.
Bye-bye.